I'm Avery Arden, and you're listening to Blessed Are the Binary Breakers, a multi-faith podcast of transgender stories. Hey y'all, I'm back again with episode 2 in this series featuring stories from the forest defenders working to stop Cop City. Today's guest will talk about organizing support from afar, because what's happening here in Atlanta will have far-reaching impacts, and because those of us here on the ground need people around the nation and the world to raise their voices with us. For a quick refresher, Cop City is the proposed police training facility that Atlanta signed off on a few years back, where police will train with military-grade weapons and practice crowd control and other ways to stifle protests. The facility will be made available not only to the Atlanta Police Department, but to police from all over the United States. So, even if you live on the other side of the country, Cop City really will affect you and your right to protest. For this facility to be built, nearly 300 acres of the Wilani Forest in one of the majority black areas of Atlanta will be razed to the ground. This will have some devastating environmental impacts. The forest protects Atlanta from some of the effects of climate change as well as from flooding. Plus, Cop City's disturbance of this portion of the South River watershed will affect a huge chunk of the United States' southeast regions. The conversation you'll hear today took place back at the end of March. That week marked the start of getting forest land cleared to prepare for the construction of Cop City. I'll tell you a bit more about how that's been progressing and how you can help us halt that progression after the interview. For now, the last bit of context you need before you hear from today's guest takes us back to earlier in March, when the forest defenders held a week of action. Overall, the week was a roaring success. There were various protests, a youth march, tours of the forest, and various get-togethers, as well as the Muskogee ceremonies that last week's guest, Sihasin, described. But one event early on in the week ended in chaos and unjust arrest. On the night of March 5th, the week of action kicked off with a large concert in the forest. As that was going on, a separate, unconnected group of activists marched up to a police security post about a mile away and destroyed it. These demonstrators tore up silt fencing and also set an office trailer, two UTVs, a mobile surveillance tower, and a front-end loader on fire as police ran away for cover rather than responding right then and there. A full hour later, police raided the nearby concert, claiming they had evidence that the demonstrators had changed clothes and joined the concertgoers to hide. The police then arrested 35 concertgoers. Despite being unable to prove that the people they arrested were involved in the destruction, these folks were initially denied bail, and 22 of them were charged with domestic terrorism. It was a scary and disheartening beginning to the week of action, but the week went on. People continued to camp in the forest, to protest and teach. I want to emphasize that it is not a coincidence that pretty much all of the concertgoers that the police arrested were those whose IDs marked them as being from outside of Georgia. People who were stopped by police but were able to show Georgia ID were released. This is part of the propaganda that Atlanta's leaders are spinning, that the Atlanta Forest Defenders, especially those who destroy property, are outside agitators, not Atlanta citizens, that they're invading our county to disturb the peace, while the folks who live here are totally fine with Cop City. This myth of outside agitators has long been weaponized here in the American South, from the pre-Civil War era into the 1960s, when Martin Luther King Jr. and other civil rights activists were labeled thus. I turn to Damon Garcia's description of that history in his book, The God Who Riots, Taking Back the Radical Jesus. Here's what Damon writes. Many people dismiss property destruction and looting by claiming that it's led by outside agitators and not by the real protesters who really care. Vicky Osterweil calls this caricature a white supremacist classic going all the way back to slavery. Under slavery, Osterweil says, plantation owners blamed scheming Northerners for stirring up their enslaved workers, deluding them with ideas of freedom and equality. The racist assumption at the root of this claim forms the logic behind the outside agitator. The phrase emerged during the Civil Rights era and continues to be used today, along with its various contemporary forms, such as white anarchists and Antifa. Osterwild sharply challenges the assumptions that any of these groups is responsible for stirring protesters up. This logic strips those who protest of their power, claiming that their experiences, lives, and desires are not actually sufficient to inspire their acts of resistance, implying that they don't know what they're doing. It also begins from the presumption that the world is fine as it is, and so only nihilistic or paid troublemakers could challenge it. But it is a racist idea on its face. What actually is wrong with an outside agitator? What is wrong with an outside agitator, indeed? With someone from outside a community who responds to the call from within that community for solidarity? There are many who live in Atlanta and the surrounding county, myself among them, who do not want Cop City to be built. And we are grateful to the people outside our community who help us raise the cry for justice for the city and the land. People like Cole, who is starting up a solidarity group all the way in Springfield, Illinois, to spread our message there. Without further ado, here's my conversation with them now.
I go by Cole. That is my forest name, and I use he, they pronouns. I'm 25. I'm local to the central Illinois area, specifically Springfield, and some hobbies, you know, writing, reading, the basics, forest defense, you know.
Just casual hobbies.
Yeah, just casual. And I'm currently in the works of getting a solidarity group formed here in the capital city to mostly do informational campaign work and get info to communities that may not, you know, really hear much about what's going on with the Uilani Forest, and also do outreach and like incorporating it as to why it's relevant to us here in Illinois. You know, some people are kind of like, well, why should I care about what's happening to a forest?
Yeah.
We're kind of trying to show people why and get the connection forming.
That is so cool you're doing that. And I think a good place to start would be answering that question from your perspective. Why is it important for people who are not in Atlanta to care about this issue?
Yeah.
How does it impact everybody?
Definitely. I mean, there's so many points where it is really just like a juxtaposition of a lot of struggles in our nation right now. One, the climate change crisis we're in.
Right.
Two, police brutality. And three, really the oppression of like our right to gather and protest.
Yes.
And, you know, Fifth Amendment right, things along those lines. And with all three things kind of combining together there, also under this umbrella of them wanting to form this industrial, like militarized police training facility, it really just all comes together in like why I feel like people outside of the area should care, because it's a precedent setting area. They're kind of seeing what they can start with, and in a way that's just going to carry over into all the other states around it eventually.
Oh yeah, totally. How receptive have people been to the information that you're spreading, especially with what is it like to organize a local group like this? What kind of methods do you employ, and how many people have you gotten on board?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of new to the organizing game myself,
yeah, mood.
But it's, so far it's been, a bit of a mixed review on like receptiveness locally. I have friends, of course, that are interested, and, Springfield is a town that is fairly active in like protest and things along those lines. But I think climate protest is a bit of a weakness on our end. Mm. We tend to focus on political issues and abortion, which is awesome. I love that we're still, you know, focusing on some important things. Mm-hmm. But I would kind of like to get some climate activism in the works there as well. And I found that it's something people are interested in, which is good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just so being new to organizing, like, it just seems so overwhelming. Have you had any sort of resources to turn to, other people who have been able to offer you insight for organization that helps make it a little less daunting?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I feel like that's one of the most key parts of organizing is just learning from other organizers. You know, it's a very learn as you go kind of thing. At least personally, that's how I'm gaining my experience. Mm-hmm. But I have amazing resources here locally with a mentor that I work with who does a lot of also local work with like a poetry group I'm involved in and Underground Railroad related things and different activist stuff. So she's been kind of guiding me in a very good direction along that way. And then I also met an amazing, you know, group of people that I was able to connect with while in Atlanta doing work down there. And mm-hmm. I met with a really great individual who has been helping me like learn more about the prison industrial system and political prisoner rights and things along those lines, which has been incredibly enlightening. And they've been, you know, really helpful along those lines. Just, you know, I met some really great people down there that really helped push me in a good direction of mm-hmm. at least where to start and get an idea of just witnessing things firsthand and kind of how other movements do what they do and just learning by example, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad you were able to get to the forest. I think you said you were here for the latest week of action a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that your first visit to the forest?
It was, yeah. I had been wanting to come down for a while and, you know, the week of action just gave me the best reason to. I was like, well, yeah, of course I'll come down. If they're calling people, I will answer it.
Right, yeah.
It was beautiful though. I think Atlanta itself is a beautiful city despite the struggles, and the Uilani Forest is absolutely magical.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. How did you first hear about the movement to stop Cop City? I'm always curious because oftentimes when I talk to people out of state, they have no clue it's happening. So where are you getting your info? How did you learn about it?
Yeah, I always love asking that question too, because it's always, you know, different answers. Mm-hmm. But I actually, a little bit of free PR for this band. I learned about it through a band called Lower Town, who I believe is from Atlanta.
Cool. Okay.
Don't quote me on that. But,
okay. I'll fact check you.
Yeah. they did a performance back in, I want to say July, for one of the previous weeks of actions. And I was just, you know, going through, I followed them on Instagram and was watching one of their performances there. And I saw all the like banners and posters behind them as they were performing. And I was looking at those kind of intrigued. And I thought, I wonder what that was all about. You know, I was interested in the climate activism behind the show, and so I started researching. I was like, what's Stop Cop City, what's the Uilani Forest? And all of a sudden I was like, oh wow, this is some really important stuff, and you know, things I'm passionate about. I would really like to get involved with this, and it just kind of snowballed from there.
Oh my gosh, I love that that was your entrance to it. And I bet there's other people too for whom the different bands and other artists who are using their art to raise money and spread the word. Like, it's not like you said you like writing and you're part of a poetry group. I also am a poet and just love, I love when the power of art, like when art can be a medium to spread awareness and motivate people.
Yeah, definitely.
And at the same time, with the concert stuff, like during this latest week of action, how the concert on the first weekend like mm-hmm. went really bad.
Yeah.
With the police coming in. Were you present for that?
I was actually camping at the forest during when everything went down, but I was not presently in the forest when it all happened. I had some very uncanny timing in me leaving to go somewhere and do a few things and me coming back. All within that 1 hour time span, everything just sort of went down. So I was unable to return to the forest, unfortunately. But I did that night watch everything go down on the live feed that Unicorn Riot did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still just, you know, tense all around. I mean, I can only imagine the, you know, just what it was like to go through being there presently. And I feel like the tension just kind of blanketed the whole area for the whole night. And we just all really hoped that things would turn out okay.
Right. Yeah. It was scary to hear about. And honestly, it was part of what motivated me. It was a few days after that. That was my first time actually getting to the forest and starting to like attend different events and some of the mm-hmm. like protests in the city and stuff. It was one of those things where I'd been meaning to get involved, and seeing what the police did with that concert is what really, you know, got me to actually do the thing, because it was just so horrible to hear. And it also sort of made me feel like it's so obvious that it's a terrorizing tactic, that they want to scare people away
yeah.
from joining and helping the movement. And so that, I guess out of spite, I was like, well, then I'm going. I'm going to join it. They don't want us to, so I'm gonna.
Yeah, in a way, I mean, they basically just counteracted themselves. And
as they tend to do.
Yes.
Yeah, so after that went down, how was the rest of the week of action for you? Did you get to camp more after that, or what did you get up to?
Yeah, I did. I unfortunately couldn't stay for very long. I think I was there only until Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
But I did get to go to one of the marches they had downtown, and that was really great. It was a beautiful march. Of course, you know, we were joined by the APD, and it was almost comical how they marched alongside us.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it was like, I don't know, I just expected them to like pick up a sign and at least help out, but
yeah.
Of course they're not going to do that. But the march itself was very successful, very beautiful speeches. I guess in Springfield, our speeches are like always so like controlled, and I feel like in a way subdued, like we have to be super careful with what we say sometimes. But it was almost refreshing, the speeches that they did at these marches, because they were just so straightforward and emotional in a way that was valid and like
yes.
beautiful
yes.
and like they were just like basically calling them the fuck out, and it was great. Like
yeah.
And it just like the passion in it was very inspiring and refreshing at the same time.
It's so clear how people are passionate about this and genuinely love the forest and love Atlanta.
Yeah. And they're gonna speak up and yell about it.
Yes. I forget what I was gonna ask. So I'm gonna move in a different direction, because I forget my nice smooth transition into the next topic, and just kind of about face, and ask about sort of what your experience is when it comes to gender and faith stuff. Is there anything, any elements of that that you feel like goes into your activism?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, with the kind of air of oppression that is around the movement, I feel like it also reflects just the air of oppression in our country right now, especially when it comes to like gender identity and the trans rights struggles we're having. And I guess I kind of like channel that into both of my methods of activism, like both with gender identity and the forest movement. I just kind of combine them, but also separate, you know. I guess that's kind of confusing, but
it's like they're sort of like parallel issues with like times when they intersect and then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Or at least for me, I don't want to speak for you, but like I feel like I feel what you mean of like so often they're combined and then other times you make the choice of which one is more appropriate to sort of bring to the foreground, like to prioritize.
Yeah, that's how I was trying to kind of word things. So thank you.
Like, for instance, like this past week, I went to a trans rally where obviously the topic was trans youth and the healthcare stuff going on. And so that was the topic of all the speeches. And yet there were a lot of people who had Stop Cop City patches on their jackets or, you know, like stickers in memory of Tortuguita. So sort of you can see that the movements are linked even when you're putting one forward. And then same at a rally that was for the movement to defend the forest and was centering and honoring Tortuguita, that was the focus. And yet near the end, one of the speakers did bring up trans rights as well. So it really is, they are so connected.
Yeah. And it's, I've really respected too with the movement, how they've kind of been respectful as well along those lines of like, okay, maybe we should focus a bit more on this aspect right now, but we're still not diminishing the importance of the other sides while putting more focus. And it's nice to see the like sense of camaraderie in that sense as well.
I just, someone else that I talked to the other day on this topic, like just brought up like how many of the forest defenders are trans or two-spirit. There's so many of us who are queer showing up and like.
Yeah, we're quite the ragtag little group, you know, it's a. I mean, we've, I guess, always in a way kind of been the folks to show up to protest and like. And also the overlap as well with the Black rights movements, and they're you know, always there for protest and ready to defend rights and like it's kind of circling back to what we just said, how focus can lie on different aspects of the movement, but they all still come together in importance. It's just some overlap at times. And
yeah, absolutely. So as we continue, like I have you seen what's been going on like yesterday that the police raided the forest again?
Yeah, I've been kind of keeping up on things with that as well.
It's so disheartening just hearing everything that's going on, that the police raided the forest again and that construction does seem to be about to get, you know, get started. Just I found myself feeling sort of tipping towards despair, and then someone will come in and say, and sort of remind the whole group that we are going to keep fighting, and there, you know, as long as we keep fighting, there is hope, and offering practical ways we can do that so that we don't slip into despair. I just wonder if you have any thoughts you'd like to share, either about emotions around what is currently going on or ideas for folks about how not to despair and how to get involved in practical ways.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, first and foremost is just like taking care of yourself. And like, you know, I always say like, you can only like do so much from where you're at. So if you feel like you're getting discouraged or things along those lines, there's actually activist recovery like kits in a way, and it sort of just gives, like, if you're feeling discouraged, do these things. If you're feeling burnt out, you have these options, and sort of along those lines. It's just sort of like a little self-care thing. But I mean, I know like that's kind of like the like easier said than done route, but
So true.
I don't know if you're a part of the Stop Cop City meme chat, but
yes,
which took a very great discourse the other day.
Yes,
that was amazing.
I was just quietly watching that go down. Like, wow, great points being made. People talking about the power of memes, and while also saying they can only go so far. Like, I was like, wow, this is This is some good stuff.
It was a great conversation. I ended up putting in a like little part on Dadaism.
Oh, yes.
And that just like really sent off a whole other like discussion that was lovely. I loved it. But, you know, like memes, as silly as they are, they can be a bit of like comic relief at times. Not that it's, you know, you were there in the chat. Not that they're, you know, the biggest of platforms for activism, but I believe they do help in a way with providing a bit of contrast to the extreme seriousness and gravity of everything. Sometimes it's a bit of little lightheartedness.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, to be able to laugh at our oppressors, and to laugh amongst ourselves and sort of refuse to give up our joy is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a way, I feel like it kind of provides a bit of more bonding or like camaraderie, because we all have our inside jokes and we're all sharing funny moments with each other, and just, yeah, it helps for sure.
Like, yeah, we're really just making do with what we've got. And the main thing we have is the camaraderie and the solidarity.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I think it's a very powerful force to have. And I'm hoping to be able to kind of expand some of that on my front. And and I'd honestly like to get back to the forest at some point, but we will see where the winds take me.
Yeah. Yeah, life gets in the way, and we don't have $1 million to pay for people's airfare and stuff today.
Yeah, that as well.
But yeah, I just, if you do end up doing anything artsy, like or meme based with your local group, feel free to send me anything as an update that I can share with folks.
Okay, yeah.
But I do think that's
definitely,
it's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. We're still very ground roots right now, so I think we're have our first meeting scheduled fairly soon.
Ooh.
And just kind of going from there. But I've done you know a bit of a local wall art, if you will, here and there. So
nice. Excited to see where this organization leads. And just like, I feel like the word is, I wish it had, like, I feel like everyone in the nation at least should know about this by now. But it does slowly seem like the word is getting out there further.
Yeah.
And so just thanks for being one of those people outside of the area that is helping spread the word.
Yeah, of course.
We need our so-called outside agitators.
Right, exactly. And we are ready to agitate.
So, yeah, Cole, thanks so much for coming on. Before we wrap up, is there anywhere that we didn't get to, anything else you wanted to bring up?
I did have one little article highlighted in my notes here that I wanted to plug.
Oh, cool.
It's The Guardian. It was published February 9th of this year, and it's called "The Cop City Opposition Spreads Beyond Georgia Forest Defenders." And it's kind of like a nice little jumpstart on how this movement is spreading beyond Georgia, and has a lot of good points. It states how both Tortuguita's murder and the use of the state laws right now in reference to domestic terrorism are first in U.S. environmental history. So it's, but it has a lot of good stuff in it, and highly recommend it.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll make sure to link it in like the episode notes.
Okay, awesome. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
I hope that my conversation with Cole helped inspire you to get involved with the movement to defend Atlanta's forest however you can. Before bringing this episode to a close, I want to circle back to something I brought up at the start of this episode, and that Cole and I touched upon in our conversation, the fact that pre-construction forest clearing has now begun. On March 27th, police raided the Bolani Forest again, this time to clear out the camp of forest defenders. They presented evidence of activist violence. One, components for a Molotov cocktail they supposedly found out in the woods, despite the brown paper bag they found it in being pristine. Two, wooden boards with nails sticking up out of them, which are very possibly debris from when police destroyed tree fort-type constructions ages ago, but which they claim activists placed as booby traps. And three, syringes supposedly full of fentanyl and urine, which, yeah, I don't even know why that would be a thing. All the forest defenders I know thought that was hilariously absurd. Nevertheless, this evidence was used as grounds to close down large parts of the public park so that it's no longer legal for civilians to be there. Police put up barricades to keep people out, and construction equipment was brought in. It's been a few weeks now, and a small part of the forest has been cleared. But there is still time to save the majority of it. There truly is still hope for stopping Cop City. Last week, the city issued a stop work order for the project after inspectors observed that the construction was already causing more sediment runoff than both state and federal laws allow. This stop work order was quickly and furtively lifted, but it is still proof that lawsuits to stop Cop City from an environmental angle have a chance of succeeding, if we can keep the public eye on what's going on. As long as people are watching, the shady backroom deals that got this project going to begin with will be forced into the light, illuminating all the legally sketchy stuff that Atlanta's leaders and police department have been doing all along. So please, keep informed about what's going on, keep spreading the news, and please offer whatever support you are able. We can stop the destruction of Willani Forest, but only if we all band together. Those of us here in Atlanta, and our wonderful supporters from afar. I'll include links to resources on how to get involved in the episode notes. Stay tuned for the next episode in this series for another Forest Defender's perspective on what's needed for the fight. In the meantime, get out there and break some binaries, defend the Willani Forest, and be a blessing to the world with your life.